Husker Doc Talk Podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy, 2017, Episode 12. Fire the athletic director, win two games in a row. Albeit two games Nebraska was supposed to win. But hey, 2-0 in the Big Ten sounds a lot better than 0-2. I'm Travis Justice, and this is the Husker Doc Talk Podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy. The Remington Trophy presentation is January 13th at the Rococo Theater in Lincoln. For ticket information, go to remingtontrophy.com. Dr. Rob is in the house.
How are you doing?
You know, since last week, our friend Dave Remington has taken over as interim athletic director. And I got to be honest with you, I like what he's doing. And because what he's doing is he's reaching out to fans via social media. He's been posting from the weight room. It sounds weird, but I think it gives Nebraska fans a sense of accessibility to their athletic
director. There's a little bit of a connection there.
Yes.
Yeah, well, you know, we've talked about athletic directors on this show before, and I know when we talked about, okay, well, what was going to happen when I-Course got fired, you know, one of the names you brought up was Greg Byrne, Bill Byrne's son.
Who's at Alabama now.
At Alabama, was at Arizona for a number of years. The guy, I mean, he wasn't exactly Donald Trump, but he spent a lot of time on Twitter and Instagram. The Doc Talk Sports site, we actually followed him on Twitter. And, I mean, he was one of those guys who regularly interacted on social media. It was kind of cool to see that. I mean, I always had a lot of respect for him in terms of maintaining a sense of accessibility like that.
I follow some other athletic directors on Twitter on my own personal Twitter page. And Jamie Pollard from Iowa State's pretty active. And you mentioned Byrne. What I like what Dave's doing is it's not the typical rah-rah stuff like, hey, feeding the PR machine that Nebraska has. He's walking around campus with his camera, taking pictures, and showing people that, and just kind of through his own lens. And what I think it does, it calms the base, because you have some people pretty fired up right now. They want Riley's head, they want complete change, but... And I think what happened, Dave, did you see the article the other day about his worldly travels?
I did.
And I think what that did, we've known it because we've been with Dave for a long time with this podcast. Dave is a very worldly person, and Dave's an extremely smart person. And I thought Boomer Esiason had the best quote when he's, you know, Boomer's like, I'm the one that flies off the handle, and Dave's the reason for calmness. He calms everything, says, let's think things through. Dave's extremely smart. I think he'd be a great full-time AD. I know he says he doesn't want it, but I just think in the week that he's been on that job, he's done a good job.
I agree. I mean, I'm not sure. It's hard to accomplish a lot concretely.
No, but you can change culture. I mean,
but you can, and I think he's done a good job of calming a lot of nerves. You know, like Boomer Esiason mentioned in that article, he's the guy who's come into the room and said, "Hey, let's slow down, take a look at things. Let's assess what's going to be the impact of this, positive and negative. What's the collateral damage going to be to the decisions we're making?" And that's something that I think he really needed to do, and he's doing it.
What I thought was funny, because you would never see Sean I-Course do this. You'd never see Tom Osborne do it. Never see Steve Peterson doing it. But Dave was like snapping pictures of his brother that came to see him in the office. He's like, he won't leave. And he was sharing that. But I think it creates a sense of relatability. And I know Dave's not going to fire anybody. That's not what he was brought in to do. He's not going to fire any of these coaches. That may be done later, but I think he's just supposed to be a good presence at this time. And I think just reaching out, being that accessible on social media, I think it's pretty cool of him. So good job for the first week, Dave. And we actually went to Shucks last week to celebrate my birthday and Dave getting the job. And we privately texted Dave a picture, because when Dave comes to town, we always go to Shucks. Rob and I and Dave and the rest of the Remington Trophy gang go to Shucks.
At least at the downtown, yes. Shucks. Dave's like mayor of South O, hanging out at Shucks.
And they turn into like 3-hour feasts. And I'm going to let you know, Dave's a big dude. We're not going to lie about that. Dave's a really big dude. but he can put down a lobster roll. He can put down dozens and dozens of oysters.
And a lot of omega-3s and all that stuff he's eating. It's heart healthy.
Hey, time now for the Remington Trophy Watchlist Spotlight. Tonight we're going to talk about Patrick Morris from TCU. He's 6'3", 200 pounds, and the Horned Frogs are back in the top 10. Coming out of high school, the number 2 center in Texas, the number 8 center nationally by his position by Fox Sports and Scout.com. Say what you want, Gary Patterson is getting the players to competing year in and year out in the Big 12.
Well, you know, and I like this guy. Now, here's the thing. We talked earlier in the year about, you know, there's a lot of guys that go onto this watch list as, I guess, fillers.
Yes.
I hate saying that, but they do. Cole Conrad from Nebraska. It will be a travesty if he starts another game, in my opinion, outside of Michael Decker getting injured. Michael Decker should be the starting center for the rest of the year, hands down, in my opinion. Cole Conrad was on the watch list. He's not even going to start the rest of the year.
I was going to use the guy from Wisconsin this week because the Huskers play Wisconsin, and he started every game so far this year at tackle. So I'm like, well, I can't use him. Well, at first when I saw his bio, because he was on the watch list, and I'm like, well, he's 6'6". That's a bit big for a center, right?
It's not your typical. It's not your stereotypical center.
So then I went as, oh, they've moved him to tackle, which happens a lot. But Morris is a guy that's getting it done for TCU. They're balanced on offense. Of course, they're just coming off that win over Oklahoma State. They got West Virginia this weekend. So keep an eye on Pat Morris, because the more TCU wins, the more accolades the Horned Frog players are going to get, and he's going to be up there in that spotlight.
He is. Now, this is a guy that I look at a guy for some serious postseason honors, and B, this is a guy who I think's got some serious NFL chops. And this is a guy who's kind of bounced around. I shouldn't say bounced around. They have moved him around a bit. True freshman, I think, played a few games at guard. I think he redshirted his second year, and then came back as a redshirt sophomore, played in all the games. Again, I think mostly at guard. Last year started 9 games at guard and a couple games at center.
And they got him at center full time this year.
They do, and he's got some versatility. The other thing I like about him is that the guy's a beast of an athlete. For a big man, A, he can move, which with their offense, I mean, when you look at a high-speed, this is kind of a high-speed classic Big 12 offense. I say classic, it's like the Big 12's been around since the 1920s or something here. But when you think of Big 12 offenses, you think of capability to run the ball, spread the field, air it out with the pass. You want an offense that's kind of good at everything. Oklahoma, Oklahoma State, TCU, a lot of speed across the board. And this guy, he can run block, he can pass block. For a big man, he's 6'3", and I think just a whiff over 300 pounds. Just an amazing, amazing athlete in the weight room as well, too. The thing that I like about him, I've watched this guy play. He can move, and for a center, that's absolutely key. I think this is a guy who, whether or not he ends up as the first team All Big 12 center, All American honors, Remington Award winner, I think this is a guy you're going to see on Sundays in the NFL.
That means that we are drinking a beer.
Infusion Brewing Company, the official beer provider of the Husker Doc Talk podcast, presented by the Remington Trophy. Every week, we get to sample some spectacular beer from Fusion. This week, the Wilderer Dunkel. I don't know if I'm saying that right. Wilder or
Wilder Dunkel.
Yes, but here it is. It's a real pleasure for all lovers of dark beers. And I'm telling you, this is a dark, dark beer. This beer was brewed in collaboration with Gerd Schoenberger, the master brewer at Brennerei. I think I'm saying that right. Eck in Borbach, Germany. I'm not very good with my German.
It's in Germany.
His family recipe and carefully selected malts make this Bavarian specialty a hearty German favorite, and it is Oktoberfest with a 5.5% alcohol percentage. Rob, I like this. You know, and I kind of get nervous when dark beers come into play, because you don't know which way they're going to go. And I've seen a lot of people absolutely just freak out because they think dark beer is just going to have this unbelievable, can't drink, heavy flavor. And that's
syrupy.
It's not the case. I mean, this is really good.
It's a good beer. Now, you and I were talking earlier, I'm usually not a big not a big Dunkel fan. I mean, and if you don't know Dunkels, Dunkels are traditionally like kind of a heavier brown ale.
That's not brown. That's pretty dark.
Well, you get your glass a little less empty like mine is. Get a little more light coming.
What is yours doing so damn empty? You need to fill that back up, Rob.
I shall do so. But it's usually kind of a traditional brown ale. They can occasionally be, if you don't do them right, they can really be sickeningly sweet.
You know,
just syrupy sweet, and this one's not. It's got just a touch of just enough dryness to it that I really like. And
you know,
this was one of the very few Dunkels I've had that I actually like.
Somebody asked me on Twitter or on Facebook, because I posted it on Facebook, or it might have been Instagram. I'm posting this stuff all over the place. Which one we've liked so far the best this year? And I'm like, that's just tough to say. They've all been really good.
They've been really good. There was
The Floribrasca, the IPA Floribrasca, I like that. I liked it a lot.
That one. There was a couple we had earlier in the year. There was the, not the Toffee Bar.
The Max's Stout. Addiction?
I think it was Max's Addiction.
Yeah.
That was a good one.
So you got the Infusion Brewery, two locations in the Omaha area. I'm always up at the Benson location. You got the brew operation out in Southwest Omaha. Make sure to go to Infusion Brewing, order any one of their fantastic beers, and you know, don't be afraid to tell the bartender that, hey, I heard about you on the Husker Doc Talk podcast, and that you like the podcast and you like their beer. It's the Infusion Brewing Company. Two locations in Omaha. Hey, it's Throwback Weekend. The Huskers wearing the 1997 National Championship uniforms against Wisconsin. What was once old is new again, and you can get your Husker gear at Husker Hounds. Three locations in the Omaha area and online at huskerhounds.com. Now, Scotty posted something on Facebook earlier. There's a grassroots effort by Nebraska students to call for a blackout at Memorial Stadium on Saturday night. And he wants to know, hey, Travis, is there any way you can use your social savviness to help spread the word? Well, this is what the podcast is for. I put it on Facebook. But a blackout would be pretty cool because Wisconsin fans are probably going to wear red or they're going to wear white. So it's a night game. I'm okay with a blackout. I like that. So Interim Athletic Director Dave Remington, let's do a blackout Saturday night. You're looking at me like you don't like the blackouts.
I don't know.
It's Scotty. He wants it. He supports the podcast.
God, I love Scotty.
Just lie.
Fine.
Once.
Okay. Blackout it is. As long as they're not wearing all white.
Hey, Husker Hounds and huskerhounds.com. Again, three locations in the Omaha area. Do you need tickets? Ticket Express is the best place to get the best Husker tickets and parking. That's right. Parking. Did you know you get a parking ticket at Ticket Express? If you want to buy parking, you can do that as well. It's been the best place for 25 years. We'll continue for the next 25. Garth Brooks is in Lincoln, Ticket Express. Disney on Ice in Omaha, Ticket Express. That's right. If an event has a ticket, I'm willing to bet Chad at Ticket Express has one or two or three or four. Nothing is ever sold out at Ticket Express. Go to TicketExpress.com. Okay, this is not your typical podcast because there's a lot of Husker podcasts out there. They do a really good job. Rob and I try not to do what everybody else is doing. So we go back and forth a lot of different things. We'll go in a lot of different directions. But, you know, if you want the who, what, when, why, and how, that's what the Omaha World Herald is for. That's what Sean Callahan's for. We just sit back, have a little bit of fun, talk about the game.
And drink beer.
I'm going to switch it up a little bit. I'm going to move the listener email to the back of the podcast, not because it wasn't good email. We got a ton of email. I mean, that's becoming like the most popular segment of this podcast. But I want to talk a little bit about the Wisconsin game, and then we'll get into a little bit of what happened in Illinois, and then we'll get to the listener email. So Nebraska-Wisconsin playing for the Freedom Trophy, Rob. The Freedom Trophy.
But there's a trophy for this game?
You didn't know that?
I honestly had no idea. About the only one of these manufactured trophies that I even remotely like.
If you say the Heroes Trophy, I'm going to punch you in the face.
You know what one I'm talking about. The Broken Chair.
Oh, if Nebraska were to play for the Broken Chair. Which one is that?
I think that's Minnesota.
Yeah. I mean, Paul Bunyan's axe, cool, right?
But that's not Nebraska.
No, it's not. The Broken Chair is pretty cool.
That one's cool because it grew out of a stupid incident and it has a kind of a cult following.
Yeah, and because it's not sponsored. It doesn't have a corporate entity
to
it.
I absolutely love that.
Yeah, so just for your information, Dr. Rob Zaska, former Husker, had no idea Nebraska played Wisconsin for the Freedom Trophy, and it didn't even start playing when Nebraska and Wisconsin, when Nebraska joined the Big Ten. It started when Nebraska and Wisconsin joined together in the Big Ten West. So we might as well have a trophy game.
So not only did this not start when we start when we joined the Big Ten, this is for only the latter half of the time we've been in the Big Ten.
Yes, exactly.
God, they got to stop doing that
stuff. I'm with you. You don't need a trophy game for everything. Now, of course, Nebraska joined the Big Ten in 2011, so I just belched up some of my my beer, which tasted really good even on the way back out. The Badgers 5-1 against Nebraska. They've split two games in Lincoln, but 5-1. That's not good.
No, and there's been a couple close calls. But
there have been.
Wisconsin's a pretty good team. They're a very good team.
That's insightful.
Yeah. They're here's the thing. They're consistent. They play Barry Alvarez's system up there.
Do you think he's difficult to work for? Because, I mean, Brett Bielema doesn't stick around. Anderson doesn't stick around.
I don't know if it's a case of he's difficult to work for as much as it is if you don't want to institute kind of some baseline systems within what you're doing. You're going to have a rough go of it. He's going to tell you, hey, here's what I want to do. Here's what I want you to do as a head coach. And as your boss, I'm telling you, you got to do this. But the thing is that what the stuff that Barry wants you to do, it makes for very good consistency for an upper Midwestern football team. A big, huge offensive line, good running. They tend to have a fairly aggressive defense. It tends to be sort of a blitzing, penetrating defense.
And a capable quarterback.
And, usually it's been your classic game manager at quarterback. Yeah, the only outlier in that entire mix has been Russell Wilson, and that was just surely a happenstance windfall for him.
Yeah.
But if you're willing to follow that system, you're going to end up being a really, really good football team. And I think if you're a pretty good coach, that's going to happen. I mean, look at Bielema now.
He's average coach at best, and the only reason he probably won't get fired at Arkansas is because his buyout's too damn big.
I would not doubt that in the least. I totally agree with you. I think his biggest mistake he ever made was leaving Wisconsin. I think 20 years from now, Gary Anderson's going to go, I should have stayed at Wisconsin.
Yeah, Oregon State was not a step up from Wisconsin.
Oh, but that's how bad guys want to go do their own thing.
Yeah.
I don't think it was he didn't like Barry Alvarez. He just wanted to do his own thing and not Barry's thing. If I was a coach and I had any kind of recruiting acumen and knew the game a little bit and Barry was willing to hire me, I'd be like, yes, I'm going to go there and I'm going to recruit a bunch of road graders on the offensive line, a bunch of members of the Watt family and throw them on defense. And once in a while, pull some running back out of Racine, Wisconsin, like Gordon. I'm going to hang 300 yards rushing against Nebraska, and I'm going to go to the Rose Bowl every 4 years.
You know, I've never asked you this because you said something. If I was a coach, and I've never asked you in all the years we've done this podcast, did you ever want to coach? You were always destined to be a doctor, but at any point did you say, I might want to give this a shot?
Oh, I think everybody kind of has their little fantasies, but I got to be honest with you. I don't have a very good mind for the game. If you ask me
how to
break down a defense, how to design an offense, it's just not something that's in my mental makeup.
Ask you how to, if you take apart a brain.
Yeah. Oh, can of corn. Now, if you wanted me to, and here's the thing. If you wanted me to say, hey, what's a big picture that you'd want to see? I could give you the big picture. I mean, of what I'd want. I'd want what Barry Alvarez is doing. I want an absolute group of monstrosities on the offensive line, a reasonable tight end, a game manager at quarterback, some good running backs, an offensive coordinator who's willing to just pound away and wear people out. And then I want, again, same thing that you see at Wisconsin. I want like a hard-charging, blitzing defense. preferably a 4-3. Because I think, honestly, in hindsight, now that I'm watching the 3-4, I think the 4-3 is a little bit more versatile.
So Wisconsin's coming off a come-from-behind win against Northwestern. They were actually down at half, then jumped up big. Then Northwestern started to make a late comeback. Right now, the favorite to win the Western Division would be Wisconsin. However, I got to be honest with you, Rob. The Badgers, they haven't played anybody yet. I mean, this is going to be – Nebraska could be their toughest game to date.
Okay. I'm you know, I was looking at the
– Utah State, not going to sell me on it. BYU, not going to sell me on it.
Yeah, BYU's been pretty bad. I mean, you play who you've got on the schedule.
Yeah, no, I know that. But I'm just saying, if Husker fans, I think Wisconsin's ranked number 8 in the country because it's had so many good years of consistency and people are going to have faith in the system and that they deliver. I'm not saying they're not the 8th best team in the country. I'm just saying they haven't played anybody yet.
True, and if you want to point a comparison, Nebraska was one horrendous pass interference, no call from beating Wisconsin in Madison last year.
Yeah.
I mean, that's still to this day is one of the, I mean, Westerkamp got absolutely waylaid right in front of an official. And the guy, I hope to God that guy lost out on going to a bowl game because of it. I mean, it was one of the worst no calls I've ever seen in my life. And it cost Nebraska the football game. It really did. Nebraska almost beat these guys last year. Almost beat them 2 years ago in Lincoln. I mean, if you remember, Wisconsin marched down the field, and I think you remember Janovich busting up the middle for a long touchdown run in the fourth quarter, and then Wisconsin marched down the field and nailed a field goal late in the game to win it. Nebraska's had two really, really close losses to these guys, and that's with Mike Riley coach team. So I'm not putting anything past them at this point. Just keep in mind, Nebraska hasn't played anybody either. Nebraska's got two wins in the Big Ten over arguably the worst teams in the Big
Ten. Well, did you see what happened to Rutgers?
Oh, my God. Ohio State just butchered them.
I know.
That was almost tough to watch. I mean, that was tough. I don't feel bad for teams a lot. I felt bad for Rutgers. And so, here's the thing. I think Illinois is worse.
You think Illinois is worse than Rutgers?
They are worse than Rutgers.
So Nebraska's won 20 straight home night games in Lincoln. I didn't know that. I was reading the game notes today, and I'm like, wow, I didn't know that. Nebraska 46-5 all-time in Memorial Stadium night games, included in the 20-game home night win streak is a 30-27 win over Wisconsin 2012. Last night game loss at home 2008 against Missouri. I remember that, too. Remember it very well.
We lost night games when I was in. I mean, we lost my redshirt freshman year, lost to Wisconsin. Washington. Of course, they won the national title.
Screw the win losses. Did you like playing night games?
Not my cup of tea.
Just because it threw you off your regular game day stuff?
Yeah. And it wasn't so much the playing the game at night that I didn't like as much as it is the sitting around all day. You just feel like you get stale sitting around doing nothing.
Okay. Relevance. Does a win over Wisconsin make Nebraska relevant again, or are we a long way from ever being relevant at Nebraska?
No, consistency is what makes you relevant.
But you and I were having this conversation about how Nebraska's just not relevant in the national conversation.
And they're not. Now, the thing that I would find interesting is what happens if Nebraska beats Wisconsin and let's say they lose but don't look horrible against Ohio State.
Okay.
They got Ohio State and Lincoln. So let's say they lose but don't look embarrassingly horrible against Ohio State. And then I got to go double check the rest of the schedule this month. I mean, I think you got Northwestern and Purdue in there.
Yeah, I think so.
And then Minnesota and Iowa. We got to pull up the schedule.
Well, you talk about relevance.
Anyway, my point is let's say they knock off Wisconsin, lose to Ohio State, and then all of a sudden maybe pick up wins against Purdue and Minnesota. And all of a sudden now you're sitting there with a chance to, because we talked about that whole, what if Nebraska goes 8-4? What happens to Riley then? All of a sudden you knock off Wisconsin, that 8 win total all of a sudden becomes feasible. I can't say I've seen that 8 win, or even 7 wins is tough to see. But all of a sudden, if you beat, and this is a big if, but if Nebraska beats Wisconsin, all of a sudden 7 or 8 wins becomes a feasible number. Now you've got kind of a wrench in the works as far as, okay, well, what are you going to do for the future? Do you keep Riley? Do you go looking for somebody else? What happens with the whole Scott Frost bandwagon?
Does he want to stay after the beating he's taken? I'm serious when I say that. Does he want to stay? It goes Wisconsin, Ohio State, at Purdue, at home against Northwestern, at Minnesota, at Penn State, and then at home against Iowa.
I have trouble seeing Nebraska getting past Penn State without it being a little ugly.
Well, Saquon Barkley's the best player in the country, hands down.
That guy's fun to watch.
He's a really good player, and he is fun to watch, and I think he's going to win the Heisman Trophy.
He's like Terrell Farley's and Reggie Bush's love child.
And he does it all. Except
he doesn't play defense like Terrell Farley. But he's one of those guys who, you know, his rushing total wasn't all that impressive against Indiana. But he took a kickoff 98 yards for a touchdown. He threw a touchdown pass. He had a really nice day receiving. The guy's impressive. If he doesn't beat you one way, he'll beat you another. He doesn't have to have the 230 yards rushing or whatever it was he had against Iowa.
So Nebraska improves it 2-0. They get the win over Illinois. What I liked about the Illinois win is, A, they had, 38 rushing attempts and just 24 passing attempts. So they ran the ball more than they passed the ball. It's amazing what happens when you sit and run the football.
Good things can happen.
Yeah, I know.
I would have loved to have seen what somebody like Trey Bryant would have done against Illinois' defense.
Hey, Zigbo did pretty good, though.
He did, and I think he's the best option for Nebraska right now. Neither he nor Wilbon have that initial burst, that ability to just hit the hole like Trey Bryant does. And, I mean, I think you called it out with Trey Bryant where you said, well, he's not one of these, 4-2-40 guys who's going to outrun the world to the end zone, but he hits the hole so fast. And I look at a guy like Ezigbo. If Ezigbo had the quickness and the power to hit the hole like Trey Bryant does, I think Ezigbo would be absolutely all-world just because he's so hard to bring down.
You know, I was listening to Nick Saban interview this weekend, and because this weekend is going to be the 1997 reunion for the national championship team. And it got me thinking about 97, got me thinking about 96 and 95 and 94. Even got me thinking about 99, because I still think the 99 Husker team was the best in the country. If Carell Buchalter and Dan Alexander don't fumble like 5 times at Texas, they're undefeated and they win the national title. I mean, let's be honest. But Nick Saban, he was talking about playing Ole Miss. And they put 66 on Ole Miss over the weekend, but it was before the game.
That was almost a frustration win, I think.
Well, but he was talking about, and I think this is why they put 66 on him, Rob, because he goes, you know, Ole Miss had won 2 of the last 3 or 2 of the last 4. And he's like, they're well coached, but he goes, what we don't have on Ole Miss that we have on everybody else is the fear factor and the fact that when they step on the field, they think they can play with us. And I got to thinking about the great team. And I don't like to live in the past because I think we put way too much emphasis on the 90s. But if you look at the great teams, Alabama, USC.
It's a good point of reference.
In the 90s, of the Nebraska, you go to any great team. Half of it was the mental battle. Most teams in 94, 95, 96, 97, 99 didn't think they could compete with Nebraska.
Agreed.
How many times did you take the field and you're like, these guys, we can play at 80% and still win because we know we have them beat mentally? That's the mystique that's gone.
You know, that got built in 94, but it was probably almost more of a factor in 95 because in 94, got to keep in mind, God, we were down to a third string quarterback.
Yeah.
We lost Mike Minner off of that defense in the Texas Tech game.
Okay.
There were games that were almost a little bit of a mental struggle on our part. I remember after that Wyoming game and when Brooke went down, like, God, is he going to be able to keep playing? What's going to happen with this? And when you, the next week again, when we're getting ready to play Kansas State, and I think we played Wyoming. I think then we played Oklahoma State, then Kansas State, if I'm remembering correctly. But I remember when Brooke re-injured the lung, re-deflated at a pneumothorax against Oklahoma State, and Matt Turman came in. You kind of start playing little mental games with yourself of, okay, well, how can we keep this going? What do we need to do to be able to keep winning? I don't know if there was that
intimidation factor.
Yeah, I remember going down to K-State, and that was the great thing about that win is it was a very solid win, and those guys were not intimidated.
Okay.
That was the big thing. That's
because you had Matt Turman at quarterback.
And they're sitting there going, dude, their top two quarterbacks are gone. Yeah. We got this. We're going to beat the. We got Chad May at quarterback. He's got Brian Bosworth's haircut. We're going to win this.
Yeah,
and when we beat them, and Brooke did come into that game and made some key plays, but when we beat them essentially with a third-string quarterback, basically with a lot of grinded-out running plays, and our defense just beat the shit out of Kansas State.
Well, I was there. I remember it.
After that game, that was the game that I think kind of shook people a little bit because all of a sudden it turned into these, holy crap, a top 15 team can't beat these guys even when they don't have their top two quarterbacks in there. You still can't beat them. That was the game that I think might have kind of shook people up a little bit. It didn't shake K-State up. K-State firmly believed they were going to win that game.
Well, and it was just interesting to hear Saban say that because I remember in my days of covering it, you knew when you went to stadiums that teams were just – they were freaked out. I mean, that mystique.
There were 95 Nebraska did that.
I think 97 did for a point.
I think 97 did. In 97, I think the thing that did it was when Nebraska went up to Seattle – and just smoked a top 10 Washington team. That might have been a top 5 Washington team at the time.
Brock Huard at quarterback.
Yeah, they had the Pac-10 sack leader at defensive end. Nebraska went out and just destroyed Washington in that game. And when that happened, that kind of shook people's psyche a little bit because all of a sudden it was like, crap, they're back.
Yeah, interesting. No, you're exactly right. You mentioned you referenced the Wyoming game. Joe Tiller passed away last week. Do you see that?
I did. One of the good guys of the sport. Real. I mean, he was
he was only 74, I think.
Not very old. But when have you ever looked at Purdue and thought of Purdue as a good team? He took him to the Rose Bowl. Excellent recruiter. I mean, heck. I mean, it's one of those. How Drew Brees was not exactly UCLA, University of Miami material coming out of high school. I mean, he was a Texas kid, but he was kind of one of these scrappy kids running around the field in Texas, slinging the ball around, and Tiller got him to come up to Purdue, and, well, he's going to be an NFL Hall of Famer, probably.
Time now for listener email. This portion of the podcast is getting more and more popular. Thanks to everyone who sent in questions this week. Remember, you can always email us, doctalksports@gmail.com. Again, doctalksports@gmail.com. And don't forget to follow Dr. Rob on Twitter at @DocTalkSports. So, you ready for this, Rob? You got yourself another beer?
Let's do it.
Clint wants to know, speaking to your perception of college football today, not in the 90s, is it realistic to think that a Power 5 program can succeed through primarily developing unrated or 2- and 3-star talent rather than recruiting at a top 10 or top 15 class ranking?
Well, it's a little more complicated question.
I didn't mean to cut you off.
You've got to have some talent.
Well, here's the deal. It's what you define success is. You know, when Bill Clinton said, it depends what the meaning of it is. It's your definition of success. I'm going to use Iowa as an example. Iowa's version of success is 7-8 wins. That's their version of success, with an occasional Big Ten championship every 4 or 5 years. That's their version of success. If you're saying, can you win national titles and conference titles consistently by developing players? No friggin' way.
But it depends on to what extent of each you're talking about. Now, if you're talking about, say, like Nebraska in the 90s, I mean, Nebraska had some solid recruits, but it wasn't like we were a...
You had Lawrence freaking Phillips and Tommy freaking Frazier.
God, there's only like two other schools in the country that wanted Frazier.
But you understand, recruiting then isn't what it is now. Tommy would have been a much more recruited player now.
You know, I don't think so, because I think so many people looked at him as a niche quarterback.
Okay.
Like right now, he'd be the kind of guy that like Georgia Tech would be going after. And that'd be about it. I mean, he was an option quarterback coming out of high school.
Yeah.
Could throw the ball, ran around a lot. But he was one of those guys that in this day and age, you'd have like Central Florida, Georgia Tech, and maybe like North Carolina going after him. And that was the same thing then. I think Nebraska like beat out Clemson for him, and that was it. That was really the only other school. Lawrence Phillips was a reasonably highly ranked recruit, if I'm remembering correctly.
But he was a risk even back then.
Yeah, he was. And that, I think that scared a lot of people away. We had some big-name recruits. But, I mean, it was kind of one or two big-name recruits, and then it was a lot of developed guys. I mean, not that guys were junky. I mean, now, if you're okay with, like, to four-star guys.
You had Brendan Stye. You had Zach Wieger. You had Rob Zadiska.
Zach Wieger didn't play his senior year in high school football because of mono.
I appreciate that, but you, Stye, Graham, Wiegert, that whole line freaking played in the National Football League for 5 years plus.
Joel Wilkes. Yeah, we were good, but I mean, there was a lot of... I was a developed guy. I mean, I was a developmental guy. Well, I say that. I had some pretty good honors coming out of high school, but I...
You're too humble is what you are.
I guess, well, but okay. How about the 95 O-line? Had Eric Anderson?
Yeah, it wasn't as good as the 94 line.
No, you had Graham. Graham was back.
Graham was back.
You had Aaron Taylor, but made practice squad 1 year in the NFL. That was it. You had Chris Dishman. Dishman actually played a bunch of years in the NFL. He had Adam True. Adam played like 12 years in the NFL. But, I mean, Adam was, a scholarship-earning walk-on defensive end. He was not – I mean, he was like a one-star recruit equivalent. But Dishman was probably a two- or three-star guy.
Okay, but look at Baron Miles, Mike Minner. You look back, and there was pretty damn good talent on those teams.
But are you evaluating them as how they ended up and where they got drafted, or are you evaluating them as they come out of high school?
I don't think there was
there's a difference.
I don't think there was a good evaluation process coming out of high school like there is today.
It's not as intense, but I mean, I followed recruiting a bit. I still got a couple Super Prep magazines from the late 1980s. Going in, which is funny because you go in there and you look at that and you see like Jerome Bettis is like the 344th ranked player in West Texas or wherever it is he was at. You see some of these guys who are Hall of Famers who weren't recruited hardly at all. You see guys who are some of the most highly rated offensive, defensive players in the country. And, I remember by the time I was a senior in college, these guys were already in the where are they now mode. So it was a crapshoot then. It's a crapshoot now. Nebraska's had some incredibly high-ranked recruits that just don't pan out. I mean, look.
Mostly a quarterback, it seems
like.
Yeah,
it does. Because it is a crapshoot.
I'm with you.
It's always a little bit, and that, but yeah, you know, the here's a better answer to that question is it underscores the importance of being able to develop players, to teach them, to coach them, to turn a 260-pound high school lineman into a 320-pound college lineman. If you can do that consistently and do it well consistently, you're gonna do very well. Wisconsin is not a
I'll give you that. You're right.
Recruiting machine. They get some good ball players up there, but they are not Ohio State. They are not Texas. They are not Notre Dame. They're not USC. But you know what? I mean, look at a guy like Sam Darnold at USC. Everybody in the country was talking about how this guy was the freaking second coming. He was Jesus at quarterback. The guy is pretty so-so. They just all this hype that surrounds some of these players, if you can develop players, that's the buffer zone against top-ranked recruits not panning out. You still need a few really good recruits.
Ben in Ohio has a really important question. I'll be in Nebraska in early November. What beer from Infusion should I be sure to get? Porters tend to be my favorite.
They've got a couple. I mean, we talked about Max's addiction.
Yep.
And then this
Dunkel isn't even too bad. I mean, I know it's not a porter, but I mean, you obviously like darker beers.
That toffee bar milk stout.
Yes.
Like I said, one big one is probably enough, but it's pretty freaking good.
Make sure, Ben, when you go to Infusion and tell them you're from Ohio and tell them that you heard about Infusion on the Husker Doc Talk podcast and that you listen to it every week.
Here's the other answer to that question. You can get the flight of beers. You can get the sample.
Absolutely. I recommend that. And then get whatever you want after that.
Yeah, get the sample flight, which already gets you half tipsy in and of itself, and then kind of narrow it down from there.
All right, Jamie has a question, but he really just seems like he wants to vent. So bear with me here, because that's what we're here for, Jamie. We're here to listen. Here's how he starts off. I'm not kidding. He has like 6 points before he gets to his question. Any coach worth their salt knows that if it works, keep doing it until the opponent stops it. Second and fourth, I would agree with that. That's his first point. Second point. Second and four. Third and two. We pass the ball. I don't get it. No Husker fan gets it. Three. Run the damn ball. It's been the identity of this team in the state for 50 years. One, try to establish the option offense at the University of Miami. I'm trying to figure out that what he's saying there. It won't work as it's not their identity. Okay, I see what you're saying.
If you're trying to do the option at Miami, it's not going to work there.
Even if the first two or three series of the game don't end in touchdowns, when you play a team that you outweigh the opposing D-line by 40 pounds per man, you'll be crushing them on third and fourth series for the rest of the game.
Got a point.
Number four. This is four with four more points. Tanner Lee is not the quarterback we were led to believe.
True.
Does he suck? No. His game in-play management isn't good enough. WTF needs to happen before we give Patrick O'Brien a chance. He certainly can't do any worse. Three, he's still on the same Tanner Lee vent. Whatever happened to our O-line playing with nasty streak, running MFers over, leaving them in the wake like they did so in Miami in 95. That would be the 94 team, 95 Orange Bowl. And four, whatever happened to the O-line looking like they were nasty instead of the blobs of goo? None of them built physically like they were in the 90s. They look soft. So there's a question. I think that was a question. Whatever happened to the O-line playing nasty, and do you think they're blobs of goo?
I'm going to try and answer most of these concerns. Okay.
Well, I got one more if you want to hear that, too.
We're still going. Keep going.
Leadership on the practice field is one thing, referencing Tanner Lee, but when it doesn't transfer to game speed and production, we as Husker fans will speak up. I mean, that was a. Do you see what he wanted to rant? And this is the place we let people just vent their emotions.
That's okay. I love. Let me first off say I love point number two,
which was second and four, third and two, and we pass the ball. I don't get it. No Husker fan gets it.
I don't. I think most smart football people don't get it. It seems to be a trend among the young, up-and-coming offensive coordinators who are trying to be cool. It's the skinny jeans of offensive coordinating. Let's pass on second and two.
I don't get the skinny jeans, by the way.
Well, you nor I could fit in them.
That's true.
My leg hair alone prevents me from wearing skinny jeans. Yeah, you know, a lot of this kind of goes down again and with that identity-type offense. And I guess the example I use, look at Andy Janovich. Talk about a guy who just didn't fit the rest of the system in which he was in. I mean, you had a guy who was a classic late 1970s through late 1990s Nebraska offense fullback. I mean, the guy was just a monster. And you had an offensive line that looked just like him, just symmetrically, they were all bigger. They were all 6'4", 320 with like 8% body fat. And I think there's been a change in what's considered work ethic. Strength coach says, I need you to do A and B, and if you do that, you're working hard. When I was down there and the strength coach said, you do A and B,
you better find a C.
Oh, shit. We were like X, Y, and Z and getting in fights with the strength coaches because they wanted to go home after C, and we wouldn't let them turn the lights off and lock the place down. And it's hard to instill that kind of work ethic, that ability to look beyond what you're doing and say, hey, here's what we're doing now. How far can we take this? How much more can we do? And until you start asking that question, it's going to be tough to get to a point where you see a team like Alabama. What you see at Alabama right now, I mean, a lot of that is an ingrained culture that's come from the coaching staff there. But what that culture is and what that coaching staff has ingrained in those players is that ability to look at where they are, and instead of seeing a championship, it's just this, okay, how good can we truly be? How far can we truly take this? How hard can we work? If we can work to the point of brutal exhaustion, can we take it another 10 steps next time? And I just don't see that happening down in Lincoln right now on a team-wide basis.
But I think that's developed even before college. That's a high school attitude. That's a mommy and daddy, everybody gets a trophy attitude. You don't have to work hard.
Well, I think societally we've gotten to that point to a degree.
So Jeff in Austin, Texas has a couple questions. I'm sure Jeff with his Husker plates in Austin sticks out. First of all, he says, love the show. And Jeff, I'm only going to use one of your questions because your second one's about the offensive line. So I'll ask the first one. Explain why Riley runs a pro-style offense with no quarterback run threat. If he's so smart, how can he not see that this offense will never work at a championship level? I don't know if I agree with that. And before you answer it, I'll give you time to think. Hear me out. I was the biggest Bill Callahan critic there was. I was a Bill Callahan critic because I didn't like the way, he was hired, and I didn't like the guy who hired him. Now, I've come to appreciate Bill Callahan's offensive genius a lot more. Okay, you're looking at me. Okay, genius is not the right word. But the reason he lost was not offensive problems.
Yeah, it was.
Come on, Rob. Look at the numbers they put up.
Okay, numbers are one thing, but it's how you're getting them and where you're getting them. Okay, take that Cotton Bowl loss against
Auburn.
Nebraska was gashing them with the run game.
And he got away from it.
Second half, he wasn't calling plays. His offensive coordinator was calling plays, and that was Norvell. It wasn't Callahan. Callahan literally had, and I heard this from multiple people inside the program, Callahan had basically an ego hissy fit at halftime that Nebraska was winning and he wasn't the guy calling the plays. And he took over play calling in the second half. I know people who said you had literally Wagner and Norvell on their headsets screaming.
Norvell left after that season, didn't he?
Might have even been the next one. I'm trying to remember when Sean Watson came in. But those guys were literally yelling into their headsets at Callahan, run the ball. I mean, it was literally, was it the Blind Side movie?
Yeah,
run the ball, whatever the coach's name is, Sandra Bullock yelling it. Those guys were literally screaming at Callahan to run the ball. Callahan single-handedly coached Nebraska into a loss in that game because of his inability to see the big picture offensively.
Okay, I'll give you that. But would you give me a little bit that Kevin Cosgrove had a bigger part into the demise of Nebraska football under the Bill Callahan era than Bill Callahan himself?
Yeah, complete inability to coach defense. I'll give you that. It's just once in a while the capability was there to win. Literally to impose a will on an opposing team, impose a will on an opposing team through offensive might, and sheer ego prevented him from allowing his coordinators to do that.
So Jacob wants to know, has Ozigbo done enough to be the starter, at least surpass Wilbon on the depth chart? And I'll just answer that right away. If you look at the depth chart that came out before the Wisconsin game, it is Wilbon or Ozigbo. So I guess you could say they're number one or co-number ones.
I wish they just put Ozigbo in and after his 23rd carry and he needs like a one carry break. They put Wilbon in for a couple of plays and then put Ozigbo back in.
Rob is back for another question this week. Guys, will we get to see walk-on standout Wyatt Mazur at running back? I don't know where.
Nope.
Yeah, that's pretty simple. From Twitter, this is where the names get interesting because they don't have like their, when they email me, I see what their name is and I like names. Twitter, you get Twitter handles. From I Read About Football and Politics. Is the apparent defensive growth real or a product of the competition? Don't hedge and say we'll find out against Wisconsin.
I think it's we kind of will, but it's a combination of both of those. I think you do have guys getting a little bit of a better grasp of this. Here's the other thing, and this is not a thought original to me. Multiple sports media guys have discussed this. 3-4 defense probably does not lend itself super well to high-speed spread offenses, i.e. Arkansas State and Oregon. Those offenses have a tendency to kind of gash the 3-4. It's just not something the 3-4 is designed well for. The 4-3, excellent against these high-speed spread offenses, hurry-up offenses, etc. That's why everybody in the Big 12 runs a 4-3. Bo Pelini had kind of molded Nebraska's defense into this kind of lightweight, high-speed 4-3 defense to combat the spread offenses in the Big 12. And they were getting reasonably good against them. They moved to the Big 10, and all of a sudden now it's this, hey, we're just going to like slug it out and try and hammer the ball down your throat style of offense. In that lightweight, high-speed 4-3 probably wasn't the best defense for it. I think you'd still run a 4-3 effectively, but you need a little bit of a different cast of characters to do it. You look at the 3-4, go back to the old Big 8. Everybody and their dog ran a classic 3-4 with a Danny Noonan at center. And that was what you did back then because pretty much everybody ran a pro-style power rushing offense. And so
is the defense getting better?
For all the criticism I've had, this game actually will be, I think, an interesting test for Nebraska's defense in terms of, okay, have they actually been developing and kind of making some strides in a positive direction? I think they have been getting better. I really think they have been.
Okay.
At the same time, I said it earlier, we just played the worst two teams in the conference.
Which leads me into another Twitter question from EJ. Doc, ask Travis why. Nebraska 2-0, Iowa 0-2 in the Big Ten. Competition.
You've played two of the better teams and arguably the best team.
In Penn State.
In the Big Ten. I think Penn State's arguably the best team in the Big Ten.
But don't get me wrong. Iowa's got its problems, too. Its offensive line is not very good right now.
It is. And Michigan State, in my opinion, and I'm a Michigan State fan, I watch Michigan State football. They played above and beyond themselves.
So that's why.
That's a Michigan State team that got smoked by a very okay Notre Dame team. Notre Dame's good. They are not. They're not 35-point win over Michigan State good.
So just to let you know, Iowa has Illinois this weekend. Nebraska has Wisconsin. I think Iowa beats Illinois. I actually think Nebraska gives Wisconsin a heck of a game. I think you're going to see a good one on Saturday night.
My son's eighth grade team beats Illinois.
Hey, make sure to check out the all-new HuskerMax.com. The authority on all the Huskers has a new look, and it's awesome. HuskerMax.com, the official distributor of the Husker Doc Talk podcast. Now, a little programming note. Rob and I have tried to figure this out, and I just don't think we can make it work. There's not going to be a Husker Doc Talk podcast presented by the Remington Trophy next week. I'm going to be out of the country.
Send me questions on Twitter. I will do my best to answer them all.
And I'll tweet that from the Husker Doc Talk podcast Twitter page, because I actually have a little control over that. But if you have questions for Dr. Rob and you want to get them answered, if you can do it in 140 characters, good luck with that. Just to let you know, good luck with that. But Rob's good at checking the Twitter, and he's good at answering the Twitter. So it's only going to be for 1 week, and then I don't get back until we're recording this on Monday night. I don't get back till like Tuesday the 17th, so we'll probably record on that Wednesday. Just to let everybody know that you're only going to be without it a week. And as I told all our sponsors, because you know the deal is to do it throughout the season, I said, I think there'll be opportunities when the season's over, A, if Mike Riley loses his job, to do a couple extras.
Oh, I'm sure.
And even if he does keep his job, to do a couple of extras, because they're going to be going to a bowl game and there's going to be a lot of talk about. Plus, there'll be a new AD coming in soon. So just to let you know, programming note.
If Nebraska does not go to a bowl game, does Riley keep his job?
No, not a chance. I would be surprised if he kept his job with 7 wins. I think it's going to take an 8-9 number to let him keep his job.
I mean, most pundits had Nebraska at like 7-5.
Yeah, that's true. So that would be living up to expectations.
Yeah.
Couple notes before we go. Just a couple things. Listen, because we're not immune to acknowledging it. We're recording this on Monday. The Las Vegas shooting, a travesty, just horrible. You just sit there and contemplate what that's like, and you can't even feel safe going to a concert anymore. I mean, it was weird. It was sad to see that, and prayers go out to anybody who was involved or even knew somebody. And at the time of the recording, I don't think he's dead yet, but Tom Petty's going to pass away because he had a massive heart attack. Tom Petty, one of my favorite, man.
Love Petty. I was listening to Tom Petty radio or Tom Petty channel. Yeah. I'm serious driving over here tonight. Yep.
Did you ever get to see him in concert?
I have never
seen him. Great show. I saw him in Full Moon Fever in 92 or 93. And I saw him one more time in Omaha. So it was, I mean, God, he was only 66.
Not very old.
Nope.
Not in this day and age.
Saturday night under the lights. Make sure to follow Dr. Rob on Twitter at Doc Talk Sports. Again, at Doc Talk Sports. If you have an email question for us, drop it off anytime. And what I'll do, too, I can forward emails to Dr. Rob. I don't want him to answer them on his own personal email account. So maybe I can just give you the password to the Doc Talk Sports.
Just send me the password.
Okay.
You are the gatekeeper.
I am the gatekeeper. That's what I am. He's Dr. Rob Zadiska. I'm Travis Justice. This has been the Husker Doc Talk Podcast presented by the Remington Trophy. Thanks for listening. Support our sponsors, and we'll talk to you in 2 weeks. 2 weeks.